Let me say welcome and good morning to everybody for joining us here this morning. And if I could just take a moment to acknowledge Ken on sound and Andrew on multimedia, and of course worship team with Ed, Terry, and Brenda, and Shayna. Thank you very much for all that you do to bring this service to the comfort of your living room, your den, or wherever you may be joining us here this morning. Today's passage can be divided into two large sections. And by the way, we're going to look at from chapter 1, verses 12 to chapter 2, 11, up to 11. So this passage that we're going to look at can be divided into two sections. And the large component, verses 12 to chapter 2, verse 4, covering Paul's details. It could be outlined as Paul's itinerary or details of his plan. And then chapter 2, verses 5 to 11, discussing church's protocol on those who commit a serious offense. So at a glance, when you look at these two sections, you think, well, is there a connection between these two sections? Well, let me assure you that there is a connection with two sections. So through the passage here this morning, we will examine God's redemptive story on display with the theme of repairing and restoring. Therefore, the title of our message here this morning is R&R, not for rest and relaxation, but repair and restore. I guess it's my first time speaking, not in front of this, not only the new camera, but I see myself on that nice projector screen there, so it's kind of weird. If I look at myself on the screen, does that look weird or should I look up at the camera? Sheesh. 2 Corinthians is quite different from other writings that Paul has written. Often his writings contain teachings to correct theology or doctrines or about moral behavior of a certain recipients, just like the first letter that he wrote, the 1 Corinthians. That is, but on this one, it's a little different because this 2 Corinthians is largely defending his reputation as he is writing as a person whose reliability and legitimacy and his teachings had been in question. And humanly speaking, there is some validity to that. However, more than his own reputation, what Paul is truly concerned about, and one of the very purpose of this letter, is how the Corinthians would view the message of gospel if they thought Paul was two-faced or dishonest. So Paul provides reasons for his altered itinerary. Altered itinerary, which we will obviously look at. And he also talks about it in chapter 7, verses 5 to 16. And he does leave room for obscurity, but what is clear and what is clearly communicated and understood is Paul's appeal to his message as fully divine and fully authenticated by God. Folks, have you been in a situation where you've said something or you've done something inadvertently, of course, and people misunderstood and took it the wrong way, and you find yourself, you need to prove yourself? Raise your hand if you've been in that situation. I trust that everybody on Zoom and in this room would have raised their hand. Paul himself is in a similar situation, and he wants to clear up a misunderstanding that has taken place between him and the church at Corinth. A couple weeks ago, as we began the series in the book of Corinthians, we learned that Paul started the church in Corinth before leaving to start other churches. Sometime later, Paul received news about problems within the Corinthians church. That's when he wrote the 1 Corinthians, as he confronts their sinful behavior and correct false doctrines on the issue, such as unity, or should I say lack thereof, of sexual immorality, of food, place of worship, and on the issue of resurrection. When you read the first letter, you will see that he confronts the church of Corinth in a very loving manner. And the theme of that love, Paul's love for the Corinthian church, which constituted by God, continues in the second letter as Paul is vulnerable and personal. He opens his heart and shows his deep emotion for this church. So looking at from verses 12 to 14, in the opening verses today, shows just how open and honest Paul is towards the Corinthians, as well as the source of his wisdom, and therefore his confidence by using these two words to describe his position that he's currently in. A couple words we want to look at here this morning, as you see it on the PowerPoint. The first word in the NIV translation that was read is integrity, and the Greek word is haplates, comes from the root meaning single, as opposed to twofold. And Paul emphasizes his singleness of motive with the word haplates, and that's why the other translation, if you look at different translations, instead of the word integrity, it'll use the word holiness, or uprightness, or even honesty. The second word is sincerity. And the Greek word, of course, here is quite accurately translated here. And it is used in a moral sense, pertaining to being sincere, without hidden motive, or pure. These two words indicate everything that he, Timothy, and Silas has done was, as we read in verse 12, according to the worldly, not according to the worldly wisdom, but according to God's grace. Paul needed to make this type of statement as his conduct had come under attack by false teachers who had infiltrated the church. So some believers had been affected by these accusations and had begun to doubt Paul's sincerity. These false teachers attacked Paul's character and apostleship. The reason is quite simple. By attacking Paul's character and apostleship, who is their spiritual leader, their mentor, they're attacking the gospel itself by attacking Paul. If the false teachers can corrupt the minds of the Corinthians, and for them to reject Paul, they could also reject the gospel at the same time. Thus, Paul felt the need for such vigorous defense. Note that Paul's defense is based on God and on his grace, not based on worldly wisdom. And that's why he's able to boast. And what Paul seeks is to restore their relationship to the point where they could admire each other and be proud of each other in the day of the Lord Jesus. Let me just point out, as you see it on the PowerPoint, there are a few words that are relevant in these two verses that continues throughout this letter. The first word is the subject of boasting. And as you see in all those references in this particular letter, he boasts about himself, but ultimately because of who he is in God. And he also boasts about the church, about them. That's also prominent in this letter. And it talks about the words that he's sincere, uprightness and holiness, as apostles recur throughout the letter. And again, you see the references. As you see the references throughout this letter. The next part of the passage, Paul lays out the details of his itinerary and the reason for the change. Now, have you guys made plans? Maybe it's a day trip. Maybe it's a week trip or a month trip. And sometimes for whatever reasons, you change your plans. Whether you wanted to or not, sometimes plans change. Well, what's the big deal for those of us who are reading this 2,000 years later? Well, for the church of Corinth, it's the change of his itinerary that fueled the charges of insincerity or fickleness against the apostle. The naysayers of Paul were saying, you cannot trust Paul. He's the type of person who says one thing, but does the other. He's unreliable, cannot be pinned down to definite yes or a no. And besides that, there was an argument that Paul's change of plan had to do with him possibly trying to gain financial gain for himself. So Paul fights for his credibility and legitimacy as a person and as apostle, but it's not for his own sake, but for them. By proving himself to be credible and legitimate apostle, he could show that his message was credible and legitimate, and that his message of the love of Jesus Christ is real and genuine, because he is exemplifying that very love by pouring out his hearts toward them so that they would not listen and be influenced by the false teachers who were trying to deviate the Corinthians away from God. How does Paul defend himself and his position? Paul used a theological argument by swearing his own faithfulness by the faithfulness of God. That is, he is able to be faithful because God is faithful. From verses 15 and 22, he explains how faithfulness has shaped him and his ministry. He proclaims to the church and boasts that God is faithful, and the greatest evidence of his faithfulness is Jesus, because God's promises in the Old Testament, in a general sense, all find their fulfillment in Jesus the Messiah. And it is God who establishes us with you in Christ and has appointed us, and who has also put his seal on us and given us his Spirit in our hearts as a guarantee, as we read in chapter 1, verses 21 to 22. And I love this part, because Paul, when defending himself, what does he do? He talks about the gospel and applies it in this very situation. In verse 23, he talks about the very reason for not going to Corinth, directly from Macedonia. And the reason was, he says, was to spare them. He first reconfirms his integrity and his apostleship by saying, and as we see it in the PowerPoint in verse 23, I call God as my witness, and I stake my life on it. Paul does not specify what he wants to spare the church at Corinth from, but we can assume from the following verses that he had some harsh rebuke, some severe chastisement for them. And you could also see at the end of this letter in chapter 13, verse 2, he provides a stern warning for the church of Corinthians. In verse 2, he says, I already gave you a warning when I was with you the second time. I now repeat it while absent. On my return, I will not spare those who sinned earlier or any of others. And he also mentioned that in chapter 2, verse 1, that he had determined not to make a painful visit to the Corinthians. At this time, Paul realized that the Corinthians church received enough rebukes from him already. And even though they deserve more correction, this was not the right time. He knew that it would hurt the church more and cause more grief than it would help the church. So he avoids the confrontation for the time being. Speaking of Mother's Day today, it's like a good mom or a good dad, like parents. We don't scold or we don't discipline our children every time they do wrong, do we? No, we wouldn't. We don't want to exasperate the children every time they do wrong. Just yesterday, a common thing that we often have to talk to about our children ever since our children are young is stop dropping dishes in the kitchen. I don't know how many dishes we have broken, our children, our lovely children have broken. As the saying goes, if we had a dollar for every dish that they broke, we'd be. But again, any good parent knows when to discipline or scold or reprimand, but can't do that all the time. The fact that Paul wants to spare them, it reveals two things about Paul. It reveals his love for the church and reveals his authority over them, similar to parents and the children relationship. Due to his love for them, he refrains from coming to dish out the punishment. And by saying that he wants to spare them, assumes their authority over them as well. However, in verse 24, he makes it clear statement that he doesn't want to lord over their faith. He doesn't want to control their thoughts or their actions, but that he wants to work with you. He wants to work with them and not on them, so that they could establish their own faith and stand firm in it. Again, like parents, following the commands of God, we want to teach our children, we want to nurture our children, we want to guide our children for them to make the right choices in life, because we can't make the choices for them. And that's what Paul is striving for here. Beside the reason to spare the Corinthians, another reason why Paul did not visit was for his personal benefit as well. By Paul coming may cause more problems and pain and grief, and he did not want to grieve them because the Corinthian church was Paul's source of joy. He depended and he relied on, he needed the church for their love, encouragement, and support. So instead of making a personal visit, Paul had written a letter to explain his change of plans to confront the major problems in the church. Now, he had been confident that when they read his words, they would understand that they would understand his coming to them at this time would only cause pain for both them and Paul. Paul's letter, however, was not an easy way out for the apostle. He admittedly wrote, and as we see it in the PowerPoint in verse 4, he said, out of great distress and anguish of the heart, and with many tears. But he was willing to undergo such sadness in order to save the Corinthians from their sadness. Before we move on to the next few verses, as Paul brings out a very important application for the church members individually and as a congregation, let me draw out three quick principles from the verses that we covered. And as you'll see it in the PowerPoint, there are three principles that I want to share with you. Number one principle is focus on yourself during conflicts. And number two, focus on Jesus only. Focus on Jesus only. And third principle is live with integrity and godly sincerity. Let's look at the first one. Again, focus on yourself during conflicts. We all have or had a conflict with somebody. Or maybe we're in that now. And most likely, we will have conflicts in the future. So what we need to do, what we want to do is examine our motives, our words and actions instead of focusing on the words and the actions and the motive of the other party. And be sure that you're right with God. And be sure that you're in the right place with God. The reason why Paul was boastful of his action was because he was under God's grace and acted as God led him. So number one, look at yourself first during conflicts and be in the right place with God. And second principle, focus on Jesus only. One of the reasons why Corinthians were so upset at Paul changing his plan shows you how dependent the church of Corinthians were towards Paul. They were focused on Paul instead of Jesus. They depended on Paul instead of Jesus. And folks, it becomes awfully, awfully, awfully dangerous when we look at any other man or woman, no matter how good and exemplary they may be. And we saw it in the news in recent months of the fallout of a couple prominent people in the church and in the Christian circles, and how due to their fall, it affects the faith of the believers. Some so severe that some are contemplating to abandon their faith because, again, of the fallout of these couple prominent leaders. Let us remember, folks, that Jesus is when we focus. Why? Because he is the author and the perfecter of our faith. Third principle, live with integrity and godly sincerity. We need to examine whether our ways of life reflect the integrity and godly sincerity or uprightness or holiness, which flows from the presence of God and God's grace in our lives. If we live our lives with the intent to reveal God on who he is and focused on the gospel and reflect his good in our lives instead of the ways of the world, then we do not have to be ashamed of our actions. We do not have to be ashamed of our thoughts because God will be on our side, which means we could boast just like Paul did. In chapter 2, verses 5 to 11, Paul turns his attention away from himself and then turns it towards the church. As he points out an incident, an outrageous sin that caused grief to him and to the church. Now, Paul, I think, purposely avoids naming this person or describing the nature of the indignity. There are interpretations as to what this transgression was, but Paul does not mention it. But we do get the impression that whatever this offense was a very, very serious transgression. What is important is that the church agreed on the punishment for this offender and or the discipline, and this anonymous person accepted the punishment, and more importantly, he repented for his grievous sin, for his iniquity. And verse 6, as we see, then an apostle makes it very, very plain to the church. And he talks about the very purpose, one of the very purpose of the church, discipline, is not for punishment and shame, but restoration of the sinner. Apparently, as we see it in verses 7 and 8, apparently, however, having once decided to discipline, some people within the church were determined not to forgive. Paul insisted that the church ought to do three things. That is, for them to forgive, to comfort, and to reaffirm. Paul had written these instructions about disciplining the man to test the Corinthians' obedience, as we saw in verse 9. Paul was pleased that they passed the test, and so with confidence he instructs them to do these three things. It is clear that Paul's message to the Corinthian church and to all churches is that discipline is not about revenge or about punitive punishment. Neither should it go on and on and on. Godly discipline, whether in the church or in the family and relationship with others, is loving through repairment and restoration. Thus, Paul urges them to forgive, to comfort, and reaffirm their love. God has no limits in his mercy, his grace, and forgiveness. No matter how grievous a person's sin is, God, through his Son, in Jesus, has, is, and willing to forgive. And we should do that too. A lack of forgiveness is one of the most destructive sins. When relationships are destroyed, they're often destroyed not because of the sin itself, because we all sin, but because of lack of forgiveness. Let me tell you a story about a real forgiveness and comfort that we might recall from a couple of years ago, from a testimony of a person named Brant Jean. Now, maybe the name doesn't ring a bell for you, but if I tell you the story, I'm sure it will. Because remember, about a couple of years ago, it's a story of a cop who, after finishing her 10-hour or 12-hour shift, walks into her apartment and sees a man sitting in her own living room watching TV. Who knows exactly what happened, but what had ended up happening, thinking that it was a burglar, this policewoman, shot and killed both them, Jean. It turns out she was in a wrong apartment. Her apartment was either one below or one above. I can't remember the details. She thought she walked into her apartment and seeing a stranger, she ended up shooting. And of course, there's a lot of details that just doesn't make sense to us. But that's what happened. And for her crime, she was sentenced to 10 years in prison. And I saw a clip on YouTube as I was preparing for this message of Brant Jean, Botham's brother, younger brother. And he said this as he's sitting on the sitting in the witness stand. This is what he said. And thanks to a YouTube open transcript, I was able to find out exactly what he said. And he said, and this is after she was sentenced, 10 years. I can speak for myself. And I quote, I can speak for myself. I forgive you. And I know if you go to God and ask him, he will forgive you. I love you just like anyone else. And I'm not going to say I hope you rot and die. I personally want the best for you. And I wasn't going to ever say this in front of my family or anyone, but I don't want you to go to jail. I want the best for you because I know that's exactly what both of them would want for you. The best would be to give your life to Christ. I'm not going to say anything else. I think giving your life to Christ would be the best thing that both of them would want for you. After he said this, he looks towards the judge and says, can I give her a hug? The camera is on him, so I can't see the reaction of the judge. But could you imagine the judge reaction? There's silence. He says, once again, the first time he says, can I give her a hug? There's nothing. And so he asks again, can I give her a hug, please? To that, the judge just says yes, goes down. As they meet in the middle of the courtroom, in silence, embrace, with tears coming down, sobbing. By the way, folks, Brandt, the person who gave this incredible testimony, is 18 years old. What 18-year-old has the maturity, has the wisdom, has the grace to say this to a woman that killed innocent, God-loving, God-fearing brother? It is Jesus in him that allowed him to do that, that allowed him to say that. What an incredible example of forgiveness and comfort. But you know what, folks? There's more to the story. There's another unusual scene. After the hearing was over, the judge wanted to comfort the mom, the innocent victim's mom, and give her a hug. And maybe that's not so unusual, but after that, she gave a hug to the policewoman and gave her the Bible. The love of God was all over this courtroom that particular day. When we read scriptures, ladies and gentlemen, there are many references that teach, that instruct, that implore us about forgiveness and gives us many reasons why we need to forgive. But one of the most important ones, Paul says it here in verse 11. And as you'll see it on the PowerPoint, he says to forgive in order that Satan might not outwit us, for we are not unaware of his schemes. Folks, to forgive is to refuse to hold something against a person any longer, but to let that go. If we don't forgive, we provide a foothold that Satan can use to defeat us. Nursing an offense from day to day and on allows it to turn into bitterness, which gives a devil a foothold. If you want to be free from Satan's power over us, we cannot give him the opportunity to work, such as holding on to bitterness and forgiveness. Because for unforgiveness gives Satan's every opportunity to deceive us. If I could share another quick story here this morning, and this story I guess you can't see it. It's a copy of Voices of Martyrs. It's a monthly distribution that I get in the mail. And it just came in the mail this week, and I happened to look through it, and there was an article that really applied to this message. So let me just read it to you. It's about a woman who, when she was pregnant with her third child, with the two young children under age of five, her husband was kidnapped and a few days later found dead because, of course, of his faith. This interview is taken several years later because, understandably so, and the article talks about her experience of those days and what she's doing now. And she testifies that after the tragic incident, many of her, I'll just read it from here, many of her friends of the church came to her and said, "You are a daughter of the Lord. You should forgive." But I explained to them, "You don't know what I'm going through. It was not your husband who was taken from you, leaving your children orphaned." Then sometime later, she says, "Then the Lord began opening my eyes through his word. One day, I read from the book of Ecclesiastes, 'For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die.' It was this verse that opened my eyes to the reality of Rami's death. God was ultimately in control, and it was time for Rami to leave this earth and to be with the one whom he loved the most, Jesus. It turned my perspective from seeing Rami as a murderer's victim to martyr for Christ, a reward that Rami always dreamed of when he was alive. About 2 years after Rami's martyrdom, a friend of mine invited me and my children to a conference. The preacher asked us to close our eyes and ask the Holy Spirit to reveal to us someone we need to forgive. I obediently closed my eyes and saw my life streaming before me. I heard the voices of those who killed my husband. Then I envisioned myself telling my friends, "You cannot believe what God has asked me to do. Forgive those who killed my husband. No way." In my vision, it was summertime and my kids were still young. We were at the beach enjoying the nice weather and playing in the water. I must have been weeping so loud during the vision because when I opened my eyes, 7 people at the conference were surrounding me and praying. I went home understanding the importance of forgiveness. I knelt before God and prayed that He would help me to forgive those who killed my husband. At that very moment, God completely freed me from my bitterness and anger. I heard a voice whispering, "You're my beautiful daughter, and I love you. It was your job to forgive, and I will take care of the rest." One day, as she continues in the interview, she says, "One day while doing kitchen work, I turned on the TV to keep me company and listened to a preacher telling a story of Elijah and the widow. I felt the Holy Spirit leading me to do something. I always wanted to serve the Lord, but couldn't do so because I was spiritually chained. But now that I was set free, the Lord began calling me to start a ministry for a widow like me. I wanted other widows and their children to experience what we have received, the love of God and His care. So ever since then, for 10 plus years, that's her ministry. Only possible because she was able to forgive and not allow Satan to continue to use that against her. So Satan once again uses what we allow him to divide our relationships with one another, and of course affect our relationship with God and prevents us from experiencing His love. Folks, unity must exist in our lives, in our family, and in our church. We know, folks, our church right now are dealing with some couple issues. And in life, we deal with many controversial issues that may divide us. But folks, within a church especially, as we are dealing with these couple issues that are really, really significant, important now and for the future of our church, are we going to allow division be part here? Because of our difference of opinion? Because of our views? Are we going to leave the church? Are we going to shun people out? Or are we going to listen and truly accept each other in love, not our love, but the love of God, and to repair what's broken and restore the relationship? We must not fall into Satan's scheme. If we find it difficult in our lives, in our church or personally in our family, if we find it difficult to repair and to restore any relationships, we must first examine our relationship with God first. So if I could ask, how is your relationship? Where is your relationship with God? How is your relationship with God today? Are you walking daily in His goodness and under His grace? Or are you, for various reasons, including unforgiveness, are you distant from God? Once our relationship with God is repaired and restored, then and only then our relationship with others will be repaired and restored. Which means, once again, for all of us to forgive, to comfort, and to reaffirm those people around us.